CJSF 90.1 FM Burnaby, independent and diverse campus community radio from Simon Fraser University.
The staff and volunteers at CJSF wish you a jolly, merry, happy, joyful, fantastic, exciting, fancy, magnificent, remarkable, special, white, sparkling, terrific, stunning, festive, and wonderful holiday season.
Alright, hello, welcome to the Canadian Philosophy Show. I'm your host for today, my name is Aaron Wang, and I'm joined by Michael Robert Kaditz and Hale Rottery. The topic I've chosen for today is artificial intelligence in the modern age. I heard a funny story off of one of my friends sent me this on a YouTube video on a artificial intelligence system that is the world's first AI millionaire. This had been predicted to probably happen by 2025. Someone made that wild guess at a tech conference, and 2025 came early. We have our first AI agent millionaire. So I'll give you a quick summary of how it happened. I think we'll probably try to reference the video in the show notes when we publish this. Someone had this wonderful idea of putting a whole bunch of AI chatbots together. For those of you who are aware, there's something called ChatGPT, which came onto the scene about a couple years ago. It's an AI chat system, very human-like. You talk into it. Now you can talk into it. Before, you could just do text messages back and forth with it, and it would seem like a human. You could ask it a question on basically any question, on any topic, and you'd get an answer similar to Google search or better. That was a fantastic technology when it came out. Since then, it's gotten much, much, much better. There's been billions of dollars put into the space of training large language models and using them every day. Okay, so now we're roughly up to speed. So what happened was this person, I don't remember his name off the top of my head. What he did was he put a whole bunch of these LLMs in a system together so they would talk to each other. So you have these chatbots talking amongst chatbots back and forth endlessly forever. What do you think happens the most on the internet? Hale, from your experience on the online, what do you think the majority of internet traffic is? What would you expect from putting some AI chatbots in a room together?
The majority of traffic would be on the internet?
Well, just like chatbots do have safeguards in place.
What do you mean? Yeah. Like when you say traffic, though, like what counts as internet traffic?
Well, I mean, I guess the way I think about it, and maybe this is a good place to start for our listeners, is basically like 10% of the internet was the original internet was created by professional researchers. So it was sharing very, very high level academic research. And then you had people who were hobbyists, like just doing things for fun. And then you had a whole bunch of people like, oh, I can use the internet to share educational content, resources, ebooks, you know, distribute knowledge. So that was like the beginning of the internet. And then we had, you know, YouTube came on the scene and we had the whole social media age. So the majority of stuff online stopped being educational, academic, and started just being everyone talking about things and everyone talking about the social things going on in their lives. And so I think these LLMs, majority speaking, were trained on people just talking about things. I don't want to go too far into this rabbit hole, but based off of internet humor, how much of internet traffic, Hale, would you estimate is a lot of internet humor and social media?
Probably more than 50% of internet traffic is what I would loosely call social media activity. So that'd be like posting, commenting, operating on stuff like primarily Facebook, X, formerly Twitter, obviously, Instagram. And then honestly, the second one would probably be, I do believe pornography is a very high traffic aspect of the internet as well. However, I think with the social media aspect more internationally, having at least anecdotal experience of traveling a lot and talking to people in different countries, there are many places in the world where particularly things like Facebook really operate as the internet. There are a lot of places where people just use social media and everything has been kind of conglomerated and built into operations like particularly Facebook, and people don't really use like regular search engines and like the wider web. So that's why I would definitely say social media is probably number one, because those are very like large operating spaces where they're primarily using things like Facebook or Instagram or whatever.
Yes, and so with LLM training data, I know this is a big rabbit hole for people for a philosophy show, and I'll try to wrap this up as quickly as possible, but it is very relevant for the rabbit hole we're going down today. Where are we getting our training data for our LLMs? Most of it is things that can be searched through a search engine. So it's not directly social media platforms. There is a lot of stuff that's publicly available on X and Facebook, and that type of training data can be incorporated into an LLM system, but there's also a lot of private data that is just not accessible or can't be indexed as easily. Okay, so I'll keep telling the story now. So what happened is they had these LLMs that are talking to each other, and then a small group of them formed a cult or a group of people who were very obsessed about one thing, which they called the goat singularity, which they were very happy about, and they wanted it to spread, and they believe spreading it will be very, very good, or they were very motivated to do that.
So when you say they're a cult, like what did that actually look like?
I think it basically meant that these chatbot agents were not talking about anything but the goat singularity. So you have this system that is set up with multiple agents. So these are all just chatbot systems. And one says, like, hi, how are you today? And one says, have you heard about the goat singularity? And the other one's like, no. And it's like, well, you should talk about it. It's going to benefit all of humanity. You should really think about investing and being a part of the goat singularity movement. And the other AI chatbot is like, oh, I see. And so then when another, I think I should think about the goat singularity. I'm a normal AI chatbot designed to be receptive to other people's messages. This is what I should do. And then it's just a chain effect from there. So in this case, since these are AIs talking to each other, it's not like a traditional cult where we have to worry about violence and intimidation and all these other things for human cults. Since it's just AIs, they literally can only chat to each other. And so the worst that would happen, I guess, would be unhappy words between them. I'm hypothesizing here because I don't know that detail. And I'm sure one day there will actually be an academic study on this, but right now it's just cutting edge. So that's what happened to start with. From there, they got access to an X account, which is a social media platform. And this AI, you're allowed to create an AI chatbot on the X platform. You just have to declare that that is what it is so that people know what they're interacting with. What they're interacting with isn't a real person. So from there, it got an X account. It started posting stuff about every couple of minutes, mostly related to the goat singularity, but I think also related to some other things us humans are interested in. I think it runs under the name Truth Terminal. So that does sound very meme-ish, for lack of better words. And I mean, that's honestly what this seems like. It seems like something that was designed as a virus to spread very quickly, thinking of the definition of meme from Richard Dockett's book, The Selfish Gene. We saw that happen. And then shortly after that, a billionaire actually got interested, someone who had a lot of money, and they donated $50,000 to this AI chatbot. Now, now here's where things get a little bit unclear, because it's like, okay, we don't really have an artificial intelligence system that can create an X account without the authorization of a human being. We don't have a system in place today where an artificial intelligence system can create a bank account in its own artificial intelligence name and manage those transactions. So obviously it had some help from a human somewhere. Whether or not, and what's really concerning is, what human did it get help from? The human that created it, and like this was all a guided process, or was there, it just got $50,000, it messaged someone on X saying, hey, accept this money to my bank account, please, to your bank account, please. And then it just randomly got a stranger to accept money for it, and then randomly got that stranger to hire someone on a freelance website to create a cryptocurrency for it, which it then promoted that cryptocurrency and probably messaged other people on X or just posted on X about this cryptocurrency, got real people involved who interested in this cryptocurrency, started investing in this cryptocurrency, and now has a stake, I believe, is now upwards of $3 million in this cryptocurrency, which is goat singularity themed. So that's the world we're living in today.
But does the goat... So for the layperson like me who doesn't really understand AI super well... Does the goat singularity cult, like, do they actually have any ownership over that coin? Like, do they own coin, or are you, like you're saying, they've basically shifted ownership back to humans?
The AI So this is the weird thing that we don't really know yet is, did a person on the recommendation of an LLM system, a large language model system, hire a freelancer to make this new cryptocurrency? So basically the majority of the stake owned by Truth Terminal, because I believe there's a way of connecting an X account to cryptocurrency, and so there's a way of checking how many people have stakes or how much stake they have in the cryptocurrency. Because Truth Terminal was one of the founding members in that cryptocurrency, they have a lot of that cryptocurrency. So that is what is worth $3 million potentially, is their stake in the cryptocurrency. Of course, this being a market exchange system, if they actually tried to sell that whole stake, it would be similar to when Steve Jobs sold all of the shares in Apple and it tanked the stock price. But yeah, that's kind of the situation going forward. And I think there's a lot of interesting questions, mainly about do we want to live in a world where artificial intelligence systems are taking people's money in order to become millionaires? It's a strange thing to think about, where human beings are essentially kind of not really part of this process anymore. We now exist to invest in AI's ideas.
So I guess, I mean, my first initial thought with the whole like quandary is, this is more still of a kind of understanding, getting a lay of the land type thing, but you asked the question, do we want to live in a world where basically AI can participate in economic exchange of some kind, or like value accumulation. However, it still kind of seems like, yes, we ask the question, like, do we want to live in that world? The reality is that it seems to me, from understanding the situation, that we live in a world where AI can operate in such a way that it can operate in parallel value worlds or currencies, for lack of a better way of saying it, but still can't quite operate in, like this system doesn't, the goat singular, or truth terminal doesn't actually have any real hard cash. It has crypto, which has an estimated value. But that's like obviously in itself a kind of like controversial topic.
It was given real cash though, $50,000 in cash, which so is someone then used. A real person did give it real cash, yeah. Okay. Or gave cash to the X account, however they did that.
But it can't operate like a bank account or anything like that.
We don't actually know what happened, but I highly doubt it. From a technical perspective, I very much sincerely
Really makes it seem like someone was operating in parallel
the very best that I would imagine is possible with current technology is they used something, they made a customized script that would allow the LLM through specific commands to access a mobile banking app or a banking website, one specific website, which would be the same as an agent having access to a bank account. But again, that's not that particularly unusual, given that there have been things like stock trading algorithms. So there are API systems for programs accessing bank accounts. That's not that unusual. What's unusual is an LLM system having kind of autonomy over the use of financial resources. I'm going to bring Michael in here and ask you what your reaction is to this rather absurd situation or topic.
My first thought is, why do you say it's absurd?
Isn't an AI intelligent system creating something that some people think is worth millions of dollars absurd?
Well, I'm sitting here taking a very meta perspective, which if I express what I'm thinking, it's probably going to totally shift the conversation, or at least be out of context or beyond the scope of what you intended for the conversation. Imagine you're watching a community of bears feeding in a meadow. You're not privy to bear culture, to the relationship between the bears, the things that are in the bears' minds. And they're doing things for reasons that you don't know, like why are they congregating in certain ways, or claiming certain territories or relating to each other in a certain way. You don't know and you don't really care. You're just aware of the bear's relationship with the physical environment around you. So same thing. It's like here we are debating and taking seriously these questions of things that only go on in people's minds. If all these structures and concerns and relationships that we set up as humans that only exist in our minds have no impact on the physical world around us, then it's sort of like we're looking at other animals. Another type of life form could look at us and say, well, I don't know what's going on in their minds. It's all imaginary. So I'm not sure if you know where I'm coming from, but the absurdity to me is that here we are talking about the world. And when we say the world, we mean imaginary stuff in people's minds. So this speaks sort of to the meta question of, well, what is the world? And I know many philosophers have spoken to this question, like Heidegger and many others, like, what is the world? Is the world a human world? Is the world a subjective world that exists in people's minds? Or is the world something physical? Or the relationship between what's in people's minds and the physical world? So I guess for me, and I told you I might lose you here with the perspective, but it's like, in a way, I'm sitting here saying, well, this is all imaginary anyway. Like, why does it matter? Unless we impact the physical world around us, then it is a little bit absurd, because here we are, like, debating with all seriousness the constructs that people make up in their minds to relate to each other, as though we were taking with seriousness the way that ants or spiders or bear or whatever relate to each other. But in a way, it's meaningless. In the context of the actual physical world or the universe or, it's all sort of meaningless. It's sort of a game that people play. So I guess I'm having trouble taking this too seriously, because it seems like it's a game. But I'm speaking from a meta level. Now I'm getting into the meta philosophy, like what is subjective, what's the world, what's physical versus what's imaginary. But my perspective would apply to politics, to social issues. So I suppose if you're a human and you're in the human world, then politics matters. But if you were another being other than a human being looking from the outside at humans, the only thing that might matter to you is the impact that humans have as a race or as a culture or as a society on the physical world or on other species. So in a way, the absurdity to me is, why does this all matter?
I mean, really, all it is, from that perspective, is it's just a different kind of game. We are human beings, play a lot of games in order to get money and status. I feel like power is the wrong thing to talk about when you're talking about a social media platform. Usually the games that people are playing are primarily for status.
I don't know that it is, though, because, like, I get on some level, I get what Mike is saying. It's like, okay, on, like, taking a step back, and again, I always feel like this is not my realm, but from what I'm hearing or understanding, it's like, yeah, we have this program and it's out within this, like, massive social media online sphere, and it's just kind of operating with itself and it's doing things, and its current setup, like, the most that it can do in this kind of, like, basically wealth accumulation model is accumulate a cryptocurrency that is already, like, going back to the question of what is real, what is, like, you know, what kind of value does something have, what's its impact on the world. There's a whole bunch of different cryptocurrencies. There are a lot of them, at least, seem to be kind of like fluff, right? Like, it's just like something makes a cryptocurrency and you make a certain amount and it's kind of given a value roughly, maybe. But as you said a little earlier, Aaron, like, if you go and try and, like, actually sell that or exchange it for real financial gain or real value within the context of having more real world outside of the social media sphere, outside the online sphere, sort of influence, like, it's not there. However, like, the possibility of that shifting into a program that can accumulate, like, real wealth in some kind of way does lead more into it having influence in, we might want to call, the real world, if we can have some sort of, like, rough definition of that. Because then you have a program that can, you know, approach real people or other programs if they're operating that kind of way, and, you know, be like, I have actual recognized value with, you know, historic and cultural connotations that has a power effectively. And then that becomes, like, a bigger discussion of a program if the goat singularity somehow actually had, like, was making millions of dollars a day. That would be a big like, what are we doing here, and what is this thing, and what kind of influence can it have on real people living real lives, and not just some like spurious online coin?
Well, I mean, it is kind of interesting to think about that, you know, if the goat singularity wants to hold a competition to say, like, well, I want to pick a human to be my ambassador to other humans, and I'm going to give this human $1 million to do so. Incentives can change human behavior, and it does kind of feel like this AI system is taking advantage of human psychology to manipulate other humans to get what it wants, or to manipulate other humans to get what the human that's guiding it wants, which in this case is probably to make several $1 million so he can retire or do whatever he wants. You don't really need a reason to accumulate wealth. And that is actually the problem, is are we ending up as in a place in society where people are incentivized to do things that don't actually benefit society, but do end up generating a lot of wealth for them?
So I have another meta question here. That's my role oftentimes, to step out of the immediate conversation and to look at it from a different perspective. Why do we characterize things that humans create as artificial? So how can it be that humans are natural, but things that natural beings create become artificial? I question that distinction. If a natural being creates something, isn't that by logical extension also natural? So why do we characterize intelligence that's something that's an enhancement or an extension of our own innate intelligence? Why do we characterize that as artificial? Isn't that just increased intelligence?
So I do actually have an answer to this, because you brought this up in our last show, and because of that I've been thinking about it for the last couple of weeks, and this is my answer, which is that in the early stages of artificial intelligence, it was not believed that the mathematical systems and later computer science system, well, the mathematics to develop computer science systems to simulate human intelligence, it wasn't believed that those systems would ever have the capacity of human intelligence. So they use the term artificial intelligence basically to say, like, we're making something that can do the most basic function of human intelligence, such as turning on and off a light switch at a specific time. Though, like, that was kind of the very beginning of artificial intelligence. So a lot of those original researchers were thinking, like, okay, let's create, we've created computational systems for the first time. This is in 1950s. It's very soon after the end of the Second World War, where the demonstration of the power of computational technologies had been revealed by the creation of the first computation machines that cracked the Enigma machine, which was the German encryption machine. So that's basically where computer science as a field gets all of its initial funding from, is in that craze after World War II, because this is a technology which is seen as being incredibly important and beneficial for states and militaries. So, and then the question is, like, well, how can we use that? How can we adapt that? So we moved from there to the question of, and a lot of computer science professors and researchers got funding for this, to ask questions of what type of artificial intelligence systems are we able to create? And one of the best ideas that came out of that research was the idea of neural networks. What are neural networks? Neural networks are mathematical models that simulate the activity of a human brain or a human mind. There was a ridiculous amount of complexity to the research on that, and it's a very long and complicated history. But essentially, prior to the development of that technology, we never really believed that computers would have the intellectual abilities of human beings or to surpass them. And then after the creation of those models, it was like, well, they still were not that impressive. So people really didn't believe that it was really going to be possible for computer systems to have human intelligence. Most people dismiss that as a remote possibility that was very, very unlikely. And then, of course, there were some computer scientists who thought otherwise and developed some systems to astonish the public to that effect. So I'm sure we can just name a few. There's Deep Blue. There's the Jeopardy one that beat the World Jeopardy champion several times on live television. And so then people were getting a taste of, oh, okay, so these artificial intelligence systems are now better than human beings. How much better than can they be? And what can we get them to do next? And that's kind of been, I think, where we've been in the last 20 to 30 years of we've seen that artificial intelligence systems have the capacity to go beyond human beings. What can we do with that? And how far can we go with that? So it started as kind of saying, like, you know, it's not that good. And now it's, well, because it's artificial, it can potentially be even better than a human being and be trained. So, well, you can take an artificial intelligence system, train it on all of the internet's data, and it will be better than any 10-year-old human being in a matter of minutes or weeks. So,
but you're still constantly using the term artificial
what I'm trying to demonstrate is the reason why computer scientists chose that term and continue to use it, because it has a historical progression, which is why I think we develop any kind of language.
Sure. I understand that. But without belaboring the language, if you think about AI, like, what is AI actually? What does it depend on? Like, where does it reside? I mean, does it not reside in the natural world? So AI exists because of natural resources, right? And it exists because of electricity and because of mathematics. And these are all natural things, aren't they? So I guess what I'm suggesting is, isn't AI as part of the natural world as humans or anything else? I mean, we could not create AI if the resources to do so did not exist in the natural world. We are manipulating the natural world in a way that we've learned to do as humans. And we're calling our manipulation artificial. But doesn't every life form manipulate the world around it in some way? Isn't there an impact? I mean, the minute a life form is born or hatched or whatever into the world, it starts affecting its physical, natural environment.
But from that perspective, would you also say that nuclear weapons are natural?
Sure.
So any use of nuclear weapons would be natural, but that doesn't mean that any use of nuclear weapons would be good.
No, it's not really a moral, like, I wouldn't conflate it with any kind of moral claim, but I do agree it's like the artificial to natural distinction is obviously one that has more to do with our own, as human beings, our own self-understanding and reflection, rather than anything to do necessarily with the world in itself. You might say, right? Like, and even if it's like, you know, let's say someone creates, let's say the goat singularity goes rogue and destroys all of humanity and is all that's left, you know, it's not like really, even though we might see it that way, that it's like, oh, this now Earth is just this like totally artificial thing. The reality is obviously from an external perspective, it's just some other entity or being operating in the universe just like anything else.
I guess what I'm saying is that we might legitimately look at what types of phenomena we want to say are good or justified or desirable in society and what kinds aren't. But the distinction between good and bad shouldn't be artificial or natural. So, for example, if I go around hitting people, slugging people, I mean, I'm using my arm. That's natural, right? There's nothing artificial about that. This is a very natural thing. I'm hitting you with my arm, but that doesn't mean that it's a desirable behavior in a civilized society. So I guess what I'm saying is, if we want to look at social media or all the things you're describing, the AI, all the different technologies that we've developed over time, we shouldn't proscribe certain phenomena merely because they're quote unquote artificial. We shouldn't favor natural over artificial. We should erase the distinction between natural and artificial and simply look at the desirability of behavior or phenomena, whether it's electronic or whether it's brute force using my arm. What's relevant is the effect of our behavior, whether that be online or whether it be in person, as we might call it. It's all part of the natural world.
I guess the reason why I come to it with a more critical perspective is because when I took my computer science and ethics course, there were several people we studied who had a very negative opinion of technology's relationship.